Hello, and welcome to Lecture 14. I hope you are all enjoying this series and the topics that we are exploring. Please feel free to ask any questions that you have about parenting and behavior management of children with special needs by calling in and leaving a recording of your question. I'll be happy to address them in the order that they arrive to me. Just to recap, here is the list of the 13 lectures that we've done so far. First, we talked about what comes first, behaviors or emotion. Then we discussed doctor's predictions. We introduced ignore negative behavior, INB, and separate without comment, SWC. We answered questions about adolescents and preemies. We talked about staying organized and consistent, and we explored sibling rivalry in children who are typically developing and children with special needs. We also discussed children with ADHD and how their needs should be addressed. Then we headed more deeply into phase one, INB, SWC, and missions in greater detail using adapted versions of the Are Your Hands Full audiobook, Volume 1. This should have given you a jump start to actually start the Hands Full program, preferably on one child at a time. And during the last lecture, we added more outlooks and insights that are relevant while you might be implementing phase one of the Hands Full program. Today, we delve even deeper to some of the phenomena you might be experiencing while working through phase one, notably the expected outcome that your child's behaviors will likely get worse before they get better as you progress through this program. But before we do that, here's one detour to address a question that came in recently regarding children who are overweight. The question was called in as follows. Our caller said, "This question is about a child who is developing typically, but he struggles with his weight. He is self-conscious about it, and I think that it leads him to be disrespectful, and I'm wondering what to do about it." Okay. So let's explore the way our caller phrased the question. I was actually happy to hear that she said she thinks, rather than she's sure, that the disrespectful behavior is coming from the fact that he is self-conscious about his weight. And the rule must be that unless we are sure, which we are not in this case, the behavior can be addressed with a behavior management protocol. In the case of the Hands Full program, simply treat him normally. Follow the protocol. INB all disrespectful behaviors for a period of 6 to 8 weeks to give him a chance to regulate himself. Both you and he will be pleasantly surprised about how well he is able to regulate himself because he is, after all, a child who is developing normally. The rest of the emotions that he is feeling because of his weight would not be handled through a behavior management protocol because they are not behavioral. These feelings should be dealt with by either a pediatrician or a nutritionist or any other professional who can support the both of you and your child's weight loss challenges. It is extremely important to remember that as long as the official difficulty or the diagnosis that a child is dealing with does not have behavior challenges attached to it, the Hands Full program can be applied to such a child as if they were normally developing. It is only when the diagnosis itself comes along with behavioral complications, autism, some cases of Down syndrome, or other diagnoses and syndromes, might we have to adjust the timing of the strategies according to the diagnosis. In my experience, I have found that too many parents jump to the conclusion that an underlying emotional difficulty is contributing to a behavior. If you find yourself thinking that way and you're not sure if you're correct or not, go back to Lecture 2 of this series and listen to it again. Ask yourself, what comes first? Behavior? Emotion? Which one impacts the other more strongly? Remember that discussion? You certainly do. And for those of you who don't, here is the nugget of the discussion. The definition of emotion is, emotions are mental states brought on by neuropsychological changes, variously associated with thoughts, feelings, behavioral responses, and a degree of pleasure or displeasure. Listen to what this definition is stating. It is stating that emotions are brought on by changes in the brain which are influenced by thoughts, feelings, and behavioral responses. This tells us that our emotions are like a spiral staircase. We feel, thus we behave, but our behaviors get replowed into our psyche, and we feel again based on how we just responded. Then we behave again based on those new feelings, and again those behaviors plow back into the equation, and thus we feel again. So what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Remember our discussion? Remember I told you about what the Chinuch wrote so eloquently in Sefer HaChinuch? Da ki adam nifal kafi pu'losav, vilibo v'chol machshavosav, tamid achar masav, shehu osek bahem im tov v'im ra. No, he's writing this Sefer for his son, that a person becomes a product of his actions, and his heart and all of his thoughts always follow the actions that he does, whether good or bad. This is a very strong statement. Chinuch is not saying that some types of behavior can determine how we feel. He's saying that libo, his heart, v'chol machshavosav, all his thoughts, always follow his maisim. Wow, tamid, always. Strong stuff. This correlates with Nase v'nishma. We accepted the Torah this way. First we do, then we listen. So if a child is overweight and feels bad about himself because of it and lashes out in anger one time, the first time might be because of it. We have two choices. We can reinforce the behavior, yell at him, tell him not to talk to us that way, etc., and cause him to do it again. Or we can IND the behavior and cause it to die of neglect. Regardless of whether this child manages to lose weight or not, he doesn't have to be disrespectful. If he is trained the correct way, he will become like many kids that I know who grew up overweight and became highly successful, sensitive adults. You remember sitting in school and learning the story about the Malach who ran around to all the nations of the world and asked them if they wanted the Torah, right? We spoke about this. And this nation asked, what's in the Torah? And that nation asked, what's in the Torah, right? You know the story. And then when the Malach got to the Yidden, they just answered, we will do and then we will listen. Behavior. That's who we are, as Yidden. We behave first. Then we look around and figure out the rest. And our huge Eibishter, who looked in the Torah first, and then created us, Histakel ba'oraisa uvara alma, knows exactly what makes us feel best. And according to him, we feel better after we do better. So my suggestion to you, dear caller, is to treat your son as one would a regular, typically developing child. And for all of you out there who have children with special needs and the particular syndrome or diagnosis does not necessarily have to come along with behavioral challenges, train your child behaviorally as if he or she is developing typically. Start with behaviors, focus on them, model them, shape them, put the possible emotional causes on hold. Don't get frightened. You're not hurting anyone, and you will see how pleasantly surprised you will be, Imritz Hashem. And now, back to the second portion of this lecture, which will address what you might be going through as you work on adjusting to and implementing phase one of the program. Know that if you implement this phase correctly, it is highly likely that your child's behaviors will get worse before they get better. Repeat after me. Yes, they will get worse before they get better. And the reason for this is that up until now, you were micromanaging your child's behaviors by either shouting, talking, nudging, or otherwise negatively reinforcing them. Now I'm asking you to step away from these behaviors and give your child a chance to regulate his or her own behaviors. And if this new skill of regulating behaviors takes a while to master, it would make sense that the child's behaviors would appear to deteriorate initially until the child pulls himself together and learns to manage his behaviors on his own. This process, as you know by now, takes at least 40 days, 6 weeks. So the following is a snippet from the Handsful audiobook, which will discuss the worse before better phenomenon and parents' reactions to these moments. Take a listen.
Because it got worse, it will therefore get better. After 3 weeks of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash, culminating with the fast day of Tisha B'Av, we jump immediately into a Shabbos of Simcha, that's Shabbos Nachamu. Why? Shouldn't we take some time to transition out of our mourning before we can be happy again? The answer to this question is based on the Gemara story in Makkos, Daf Chaf Dalet Amud Beis, of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yehoshua, and Rabbi Akiva, who were walking in Yerushalayim in a place that overlooked the Makom HaMikdash shortly after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. As they were looking toward the spot of the Kodesh HaKodashim, a fox came out and trod upon it. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Yehoshua began to cry. Rabbi Akiva, however, began to laugh. The three Tanoim asked Rabbi Akiva, "Why are you laughing?" In response, Rabbi Akiva asked the others, "And why are you crying?" Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Yehoshua explained, "A place about which the Torah says, 'And the stranger who walks close to this place shall die,' now has foxes treading on it? For that we shouldn't cry?" Rabbi Akiva responded that he was laughing for that exact reason. He then made reference to two prophecies made by two different Nevi'im who lived hundreds of years apart. The first prophecy, the first Nevuah, was by Uriah Kohen, which told about the Churban. The second prophecy, the second Nevuah, was by Zechariah HaNavi, who told about the coming of Mashiach and the Geula. Rabbi Akiva explained that in order for the prophecy of the Geula by Zechariah HaNavi to be fulfilled, the first Nevuah describing the Churban must take place. Now that we have seen that the Churban really happened, he was equally convinced that the final Geula would occur as well. The other three Tanaim thanked Rabbi Akiva for consoling them by saying, "Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva nichamtanu." The lesson of this Gemara can be applied to the process of parenting. Rabbi Akiva explained that until the first and negative part of a prediction happens, one cannot be sure that the second and positive prediction will also occur. Similarly, we cannot assume that positive behaviors will emerge instantaneously and miraculously in a child whose behaviors already leave much to be desired. In fact, things will get worse before they begin to get better, and this is to be expected. Chinuch is not magic. Implementing techniques will not realistically produce instant perfect behaviors. In order for children to change their behaviors, they must become aware that something in the environment is different. The child's initial deterioration in behavior is a clear signal to the parent that the child has become aware of the change and is testing its permanence. Ultimately, the child will begin to learn from the techniques and positive behaviors will follow. Thus, your reaction to deterioration of behavior should be similar to Rabbi Akiva's reaction to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Rejoice that your child possesses the cognitive ability to be aware of your changed technique. Anticipate that positive behavior is going to follow in the near future. Children's negative behaviors will often take place in tantrum form. Although a tantrum is an undesirable behavior like any other, it is common for children to experience a sharp increase in tantrum behaviors when their parents begin INB and SWC. The behaviors will get worse before they get better. Parents must recognize all forms of tantrums and accept them as an expected deterioration in behavior. In this way, they can deal with them in an appropriate, non-negative way and not become overwhelmed by seeming regression, or worse, abandon this program's strategies because they don't work instantly. Putting it into perspective, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, tells us that we are now in the days of Ikvasa de Mashiach, the days that immediately precede the coming of Mashiach. On a nationwide level, Klal Yisrael is experiencing unease as our physical and spiritual existence are subject to constant public scrutiny. On a personal level, we hear about terrible nisyonos among individuals in Klal Yisrael. We find ourselves davening to Hashem throughout the day that He continue to protect us and our children from the evils that surround us. It is at times like this that we must realize and internalize that typical childhood mishaps are a bracha. Children spilling apple juice on the floor is a bracha. Doll carriages banging into walls are a bracha. These are good things. Without the proper perspective, we can easily blur our definitions of good and bad. We can easily label the everyday messes, scuffs, dirty shoes, and missed buses as bad. 70 years ago, would someone have dared to share this list of mishaps with a Holocaust survivor whose entire family had perished under the Nazis, Yimach Shemam? Please remember those Kedoshim who would have given anything to experience the scuffs on their walls and the piles of unfolded laundry that we complain about so bitterly. We must refocus ourselves. Children scuff and spill. They leave messes and they leave fingerprints. They go to sleep late and they wake up early. We don't want our children's shirts to be clean at the end of a day. Let's not take what we have for granted. Let's remember that children are a bracha from Hashem and thank Him for them. In fact, the more frequently we thank Hashem for our children, the less we will find ourselves reacting negatively to the everyday stresses of life. And so, if a child spills a bottle of apple juice on the floor on the first night of a 3-day yontif, immediately after the cleaning lady left, what should you do? Thank Hashem for the child, thank Hashem for the apple juice, thank Hashem for the washable floor, and thank Hashem for the fact that your family is home for Yontif. By the time you finish your thank you list, you will not have much desire to scream about the spilled juice, and you will have cleaned everything up. This gratitude will benefit both you and your children as well, because they will learn from the way you control your anger during stressful times. Unfortunately, we are all guilty to some extent of valuing the objects in our lives more than the people in our lives. We worry more about the objects, walls, floors, couches, and furniture, than about the people in our lives who ruin them, our children. We respond quickly with anger to the child who accidentally slit the new leather couch, even though we know that couches are completely transient and replaceable, while children are eternal and easily scarred. We must constantly remind ourselves that floors, walls, cabinets, and couches are only objects. They come and they go. Children, on the other hand, are eternal. They will produce the future generations of Klal Yisrael. The people in our lives must always come first. This, of course, does not undermine the importance of teaching children to value the items in their environment. These lessons, however, must be taught in 72-hour mode, without anger. Screaming about walls, tables, and couches will send a message to children that parents get angry when items are ruined. But it does not teach them to take care of items because they possess intrinsic value. An excellent way for parents to teach children to value items is by teaching them to value other people's property. Children will learn this when they see their parents worrying not only about their own property, but about somebody else's property as well. Consider the following examples. 1. Mrs. T shepherded her children onto a public bus and handed a bag of potato chips to each one. Did Mrs. T ask whether it was permissible to eat on this bus? Are the crumbs going to make the bus dirty? Did her children leave the empty snack bags on the bus? 2. After loading the groceries into the trunk of her car, Mrs. T was left with an empty shopping cart. What did she do with it? Did she leave it in the middle of the parking spot adjacent to her car so that the next driver would have to get out of his car to move it? Did she let it roll away and collide with a neighboring car? 3. The T family was having fun at a neighbor's house, but it was almost time to go home. Did Mrs. T make sure that her children played with the toys carefully and did not break them? Did Mrs. T make sure that her children cleaned up any mess they created? In situations in which you demonstrate your objective concern for someone else's property, unrelated to your own personal benefit, you are employing the most effective form of role modeling. By showing youngsters that you value the possessions of others, you are teaching them to value the objects in their environment.
Have a wonderful week.